According to DayJet's Yakabuchi, initial eclipse availability is promising. Today's AvWeb audio special from NBAA in Atlanta is brought to you by the Bose Aviation Headset 10. Check it out at bose.com/headset. Ed Yakabuchi, president and CEO of DayJet, told AvWeb in this extended audio cast that the initial maintenance availability and reliability of the company's first 12 Eclipse 500 twin jets has been better than he expected, and that operating economics have thus far panned out to within 5% of expectations as DayJet flies its first revenue passengers. So far, so good. But Yakabuchi says DayJet's marriage to Eclipse isn't necessarily monogamous. He's talking to other jet makers, too. Bottom line, it's too soon to tell what the long-term potential of either the VLJ market or the air taxi segment will be.
Ed, I was on the ramp at Lakeland about a month ago, and I saw a DayJet in DayJet colors, and I heard one on the frequency, which suggests to me that you're starting to fly the airplanes. Where do you stand with acquiring the airplanes? How many do you have, and what kind of revenue service are you doing at this point?
Good morning. Yes, indeed. We certainly are flying. We have been for the better part of a month, month and a half. We haven't been flying all revenue passengers. We've been flying quite a bit of what I'll call practice, which is much more than practice. We're flying our own personnel between our markets and doing market development and sales and so forth. But about 2 weeks ago, we started activating revenue customers as well, bringing them into the mix. The objective was to load the operation to realistic levels so that we can see if we can iron out, first of all, see if there are any kinks, which inevitably there are, and then iron them out and then test the fixes.
How many aircraft do you have now?
We've got 12 aircraft now. We've got about somewhere between 3 and 4 on a day-to-day basis flying the production, if you will. And then we've got a number of aircraft that are dedicated to training, because we're still continuing to hire crews. And we've got a couple that are spares, and they rotate also as backup and maintenance for upgrades. Generally speaking, let me restrict my comments to the ones that are flying production services. The 3 or 4 that fly production fly anywhere. Every day, they fly anywhere between 3 and 10 missions a day. Roughly, our missions are about an hour length now. Our typical mission profile is 250, 260 miles.
Are those all in Florida?
And predominantly in Florida. We fly to 5 day ports, Boca, Lakeland, Gainesville, Tallahassee, and Pensacola. But then we also have what we call day stops, which is 75 additional places that people can go on a full plane basis if they're so interested. The bulk of our flying has been dayport to dayport, or per seat on demand, as we call it. And the per seat services are, as I said, they're running from an operations standpoint, we're running 3 to 10 flights a day.
Now, I hesitate to use the word load factor, because that really applies to airlines, but what kind of, I guess, cabin occupancy do you have on these flights?
Well, it's interesting that you should make that comment. If I was running a normal charter operation, I'd say you're right, it applies to airlines. But we have a variation of load factor that we track ourselves, and that is indeed one of the factors that determine the efficacy of our system and the business success of the model. We track a number of factors. Load factor is one of the critical revenue drivers. Another critical revenue driver, believe it or not, is the price that people value their time. In other words, whether they're quoting tight schedules or loose schedules makes a difference in terms of our revenue yield. So the load factors, it's pretty early right now, but we're obviously averaging more than one, because you don't fly. You compute load factor in an on-demand operation based on flights that you fly. So our load factor is north of one. It's not where we'd like it to be, but then again, we never expected it to be at this point in time. So that's one of the things that we're tracking carefully and continuing to grow. It's one in a fraction.
How is the initial reaction to the software you're using to generate the customers? Does it need tweaking, or is it, I'm sure it's constantly?
Everything needs tweaking in life. You know, you can build things to an ideal model, but the reality of it is, until you're actually operating with real people, real business, real customers, you don't really know what issues you've got. And by and large, that's what we've been shaking out. A lot of people ask me, well, what could you possibly be shaking out? And I answer an awful lot of stuff. The notion of being able to file an electronic flight plan from reservation to the time it goes to the pilot's EFB is relatively straightforward. We've had plenty of time to practice and figure out how that works. The issue is...
And that's got to work.
Well, that has to work. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, that's its core to the maintaining the safety of the operation, which, by the way, is paramount in our, from our perspective. Safety is well ahead of, in fact, there's no comparison. Safety, customer service all come ahead of profitability at this point. Well, always will be ahead of profitability, but we're hoping that we can balance all of them. So back to your question, though, we can generate the flight plans, and that's working very well. There's some issues that we had to tune in terms of our burn rates, the projected burn rates, because obviously we're planning fuel loads and balance, weight and balance, and, you know, we had a little calibration to do. And we're past that. Some of the flight times were a little bit off, and we're calibrating that. And that's, we're past that. But by far the hardest problem has been the human side of things. We're operating a model that really people are not familiar with, and consequently it becomes a challenge to communicate with customers. The customers get it. I'm not so sure that all our employees have gotten it initially.
Give me an example.
Well, one of the things that you'd never think of that would have caused issues early on would have been something as simple as the interface that we provide to our customer care professionals, or our CCPs, at the day ports. We built a tool that's very nice. It's a whole system. It's a field information system that has a view of everything that's going on in the system and presents it to the field folks so that they can communicate with customers. And we gave them an awful lot of data. What we didn't realize was that in all the data that we gave them too much data in many cases, because they were telling customers, as you would in a normal best practice, somebody that's been in the business before, tell them your airplane's on the way, it's such and such a tail number, it's coming, it should be here in 5, 10, 15 minutes. You can track it by looking at the FBO's flight tracker. And that's all fine and dandy if you were operating on a fixed static charter model. But the problem is that we're reoptimizing whenever there's delays in the network, and we're flipping customers between airplanes. And it's not unsafe. It's all we're actually doing, load and balance and recomputing everything as we go along. But if you communicate to the customer, then you're on tail number XYZ. And then you have to come back 2 minutes later and say, you were not on XYZ, you're on WXF or some other tail number that's coming from a different direction to pick you up. Then you wind up looking kind of silly to your customers. And it's not that you don't know what you're talking about. It's that you're trying to be helpful and provide information, but it's information that's not frozen yet. It's still dynamic. So we've been going through everything that we've got and trying to figure out what gets frozen at what point in time. Of course, that's been a whole process that we're going through and taking another look at our workflows and our customer service scenarios and how we answer what questions. We're not trying to hold back data. It's just that people like to know things when they're firm, not while they're still being
What's your impression of initial dispatch reliability of the Eclipse?
That's been a pleasant surprise. We've obviously been tracking. We're not doing dispatch reliability right now. We're tracking dispatch availability, which is the first step, obviously. Which basically it tells you of the times that you expected the airplane to be available on a valid maintenance release, what percentage of the time is it available? And you have to nail that down first, and then you dig deeper into the reliability, which is does it fail when it's after it's been on the release. So the availability was a big concern of mine, because that tests all the maintenance systems, the MRO, the support systems and everything else. Early on, it was pretty bad. I mean, we weren't running very high. I won't even quote the numbers. It was below 50%. We've been testing the systems with, and by early on, I mean back in May and June when we were doing training flights. Some of it was the fact that we were doing, you know, training, which is kind of an unpredictable thing from a timing and a mission profile. And some of it was early aircraft and early processes. I'm happy to say that since we've been turned down the auto scheduling and dispatching systems, that we've been running very acceptable dispatch rates, in fact, better than what we projected, which is north of 75%. Mm-hmm. Our objective, of course, is to be in the 90s.
And don't go anywhere. Right back with more of our special audio coverage from NBAA as Paul Bertarelli continues his conversation with Ed Iacobucci, President and CEO of DayJet. Presented by Bose Aviation Headset 10, voted number one for the sixth consecutive year in Professional Pilots 2006 Headset Preference Survey. Enjoy full spectrum noise reduction, clearer audio, and comfortable around-the-ear fit. Learn more at Bose.com/headset.
How about initial operating economics married up to the what you've taken an estimate of what customers will pay? How is that working out so far?
Well, there's two sides of that coin, right? And the first piece is the first thing that I like to measure things by at what point in time do I lose sleep over various things. And there was a point in time that I lost sleep over can we deliver on the cost, on the operating cost. And of course, maintenance is still, we'll still be working on that as time goes on, but fuel and fuel efficiency and performance at different flight levels was the first thing that we had to nail down. And I'm happy to say that that's probably within 4 or 5% of where we wanted. And like I said, we had to adjust a little bit, but it's generally pretty good. Now, it's a good airplane for our mission profile, somewhere between I would say 70 and 75 gallons an hour in the shorter profiles that we're flying now. And this is without aero mods. And we're expecting that'll come down a little bit more. But that's within.
On a short profile, you climb to the 30s?
It varies. It varies. We've got some very, very short profiles that we fly seldom above 180, which is obviously not something we like. But, you know, for a very short profile, that's all that makes sense. Most profiles we're flying in the 230, 240, and then some of the medium and longer profiles, we're up in the 30 to 32. We've been working with ATC for quite some time. We generally fly routes that don't see very much traffic. We've actually worked out all the routings between day ports with ATC so that we don't disrupt any of their operations, and it seems to fit pretty nicely.
That operation, you'll probably never see the 40s?
Certainly not between Boca and Gainesville or Boca and Tallahassee. As a matter of normal operation, we wouldn't see that. Obviously, the benefit of being able to go into 40s is not that that's where you're going to operate, but that's where you could operate if you had to. Mm-hmm. And I've seen plenty of situations on my own jets that I've had to climb out of the way of trouble, into the high 30s and low 40s. And we anticipate that the Eclipse won't be any different than that. But again, it's probably unlikely that we're going to climb to level 410 if we're only going 200 miles. Mm-hmm. That's probably still the longer. And Boca to Pensacola is a fairly long mm-hmm. trek.
Last question. Year ago at NBAA, we asked Fern Rayburn how many Eclipse 500s would be delivered by now, and I believe the number was around 400. Obviously, they haven't made that. It may be unlikely that they'll make it a year from now. Does that concern you, and how does it concern you, and what is Plan B if Eclipse doesn't survive what is clearly a very difficult period?
Yeah, it's tough developing markets, trying to sell to people that are more in the market before, what we call new markets. And I don't think that the Eclipse per se necessarily is a new market in and of itself. It's an evolution, a very nice, substantial evolution of aviation capabilities. The revolutionary part of what we're doing that's going to create new markets is more the business model that we're developing from a clean sheet here. From the very beginning, I've impressed upon one of the things that culturally is very important in our company is flexibility. And obviously, since everything is planned dynamically, that you have to learn to be flexible. And that applies also to aircraft fleet. We've gone through many, many different models. We're pretty adept at figuring out how to go if one, or if we have two less in 1 month or two more in another, we can adjust. Most of our variable cost is dynamically staffed just in time. We've got most of the infrastructure baked in. Slower ramp rate on airplanes means that our overhead absorption, our fixed overhead, will take longer. But our business plan contemplates a very long period there. So we're looking at, we've got enough capital that'll take us through a whole variety of scenarios. The economics that we really want to prove, however, are not the absorption, because that's a function of scale. The more important thing is, can we operate efficiently enough at a point in time where we can demonstrate for a fixed fleet size, discounting the corporate overhead, which we can project the scaling of, how does that economic stack up? And that's going pretty well.
If you had to switch to a different model, let's say that Eclipse, for whatever reason, couldn't deliver the airplanes you expect, at this juncture, is that possible to you? Does it look like you could use another model or another aircraft?
The thing about Eclipse, and I'll say this and then go on, but the thing about Eclipse that's interesting is that it is the smallest, most, irrespective of how you load it, the most economical jet that's available today, that's available in large quantity. So they have that they've secured a spot in our business model. That does not mean that our business model is built around that jet. It is a very important piece because it's at the low end. Now, 2 years from now, I don't know what the low end looks like. It's either going to be Eclipse or it's going to be someone else. Mm-hmm. And I've always told Vern that, you know, if you produce, you got it. If you don't, it's a, you know, we're in business of filling that profile for a small aircraft. Then the interesting thing is that there's multiple tiers beyond that, and the next one is a 4 to 6 packs. You don't launch an on-demand service and follow all the regulatory. You can't follow all the regulations properly unless, and be on demand, unless you have the ability to fly one passenger around. Mm-hmm. Because by definition, to be an on-demand carrier, 135 carrier, the demand has to come from the customer. You can't publish a schedule to the customer. So that means that you have to be responsive to the customer. So well, the real answer is to have a multi-tier solution where you can scoop demand and be able to generate demand and service demand at the 1 and 2 packs level, reasonably economically or profitably, and then be able to, within the context of your system, aggregate and substitute other kinds of aircraft as the demand for on a particular hour by hour, day by day, is self-identifying higher. So our models always had multiple tiers.
Well, it sounds to me like you're fairly confident that Eclipse is going to deliver here, but you're not entirely wedded to that airplane, that you have explored other options. We would have done.
That's interesting. A lot of people think that we just kind of started with Eclipse. We've been in this business for 5 years, and the models that we've been developing, the demand models and the market models and the traffic models, frankly, we've been sharing and using with not only regulating bodies, but we've been working with Embraer since they started. Back when IAI was working on design airplane, we would frequently be collaborating with IAI, with Eclipse. Obviously, we spent time with Cessna, with Atom. We've spent time with Spectrum. Now we're spending time with Honda, in addition to GE and Pratt & Whitney. So we believe that the industry is bigger than us, and that part of our role as being one of the first to try this different kind of an aggregation schema is to help ensure that the players are armed with the same kind of data that we're armed with. And so therefore we've been doing assessments of models from all various manufacturers for the last 3 years. So not only do we know how they perform in our system, but we know at what level and what point in time. We haven't placed or made any announcements on any additional orders, because frankly right now the name of the game is prove that you can aggregate at the 1, 2, and 3 packs level. And thinking anything beyond that doesn't make sense.
The Eclipse economics are ideal for that proof.
Oh, it's perfect. I mean, that's perfect. I mean, that's not to say that the single engine Eclipse or the single engine the Cirrus or some other thing may not make sense, or some other dual engine small aircraft will make sense. But right now, I mean, make no mistake about it, the the rule of thumb of the more seats the better is a rule of thumb that's wedded to scheduled operations. In on-demand world, you have to have as an entry point, if you really want to implement scalable on-demand, at the entry point, you have to be able to carry one person and not lose your shirt. Mm-hmm. And that's what Eclipse gives us, is that entree. Now, where it goes from there is going to depend on how the market evolves.
All right. Well, Ed, thank you very much for talking to us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ed Iacobucci, President and CEO of DayJet. You've been listening to one of several extra audio features we're releasing this week from NBAA in Atlanta. And as always, watch avweb.com for the latest print and video coverage. Comments on this audio cast welcome at audionews@avweb.com. Today's report was brought to you by the Bose Aviation Headset 10. Check it out at bose.com/headset. I'm Mike Blakeney for AvWeb Audio. Thanks for listening.